I'm Brittany Knutson, and I'm here with Michael Halloran. Okay. When did you first join RSA?
Let's see, it would have been sometime in the 1980s, I believe. There's actually something funny about that. I had written to George Yost, who was then, sort of being everything, and got no response from him. And then I met him at a Four Seas conference, and I said sort of diffidently, Professor Yost, did you get my letter about joining RSA? He said, Halloran, didn't I send you some books to review? So, George was not the most organized person in the world, but he's a wonderful guy. And I've been, since then, I've been a member.
Were you a graduate student then?
No, I was, I became a graduate student right around the time that RSA was founded, 1967. I started the graduate program at RPI.
How did you first learn about the organization?
That's a good question, which, as we all know, means I don't know the answer to it. I really can't remember how I first learned of it. I may have seen a copy of the Rhetoric Society Quarterly.
Sure.
I was going regularly to the Four Seas back then, and it may just have been in conversation with somebody at the Seas that I learned about RSA.
How would you describe the organization when you first joined it?
Small, not highly organized. My story about George thinking that he sent me some books to review attests to that. It was, Richard Young in a little exchange with Rich Enos, I think it was he who described it as like originally a sort of a circle of friends who just had this mutual interest. And that's how it grew, and it has continued to grow quite phenomenally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny to think of it as small now, sort of watching all of the people come through today.
Yeah.
Who are some of the key people you remember meeting or working with during your early years as part of RSA?
Well, George, certainly. Richard Young, I got to meet at some point. Who else? I went to at least one, maybe two, of the conferences that were held at Arlington, Texas. And I got to know the late Charles Knoper, but not really well, before he died. Victor Batanza, Rex Veeder, who took over from George as editor of the journal. And incidentally, I got to see Rex last summer. He's not in good health, but he's still, mentally, he's very sharp. He's fine. I'll see if there are other people that I think of. Jim Corder. I don't know whether Jim was involved with RSA or not, but he was at Texas Christian. And I got to be very friendly with Jim, mainly through the Four Seas. Ross Winteroud, I think I mentioned him. already. I had a funny experience with Ross. I had published someplace an article, and I was giving a talk at I think it was at the Four Seas, and I was critical of something that Ross had published, and he was in the audience, and he did not take it kindly. Afterwards, we introduced ourselves, and he said something about, well, he said, you quoted me out of context outrageously, which was not true. But Ross was a very crusty guy. And he was really one of the key people at the very beginning. Hmm. I remember, we'd had this rather unpleasant exchange at the Four Seas, and somehow, I don't think it was through Ross, I think it was through somebody else at USC, I got invited to go there and give a talk. And I accepted the invitation fully expecting to be beaten about the head and shoulders by Ross, but I accepted because my son was at the time a student at Occidental College in Los Angeles, and I thought, well, I get my fare paid, and I get to visit John, and I'll have to suffer a little humiliation. But in fact, Ross was as kind and hospitable a host. I was astounded. He was very, very nice. But he had this very mercurial personality. He's always full of energy, and it kind of burst out in different directions. I remember seeing him at an early Four Seas meeting, giving a talk, and he was making reference to the ill repute in which rhetoric as a field was held in departments of English at the time. And he referred to himself as this kind of featured speaker at the Four Seas. He said he thought of himself as the cream of the scum.
Do you think that's still the case, that English departments?
I think things have changed. I think that I used to be an active member of MLA. I was on a couple of committees there, and I know Phyllis Franklin, who was the executive director back then. She really wanted to see the organization broaden its scope and become more hospitable to fields such as rhetoric and composition, but it was a hard slog, and but I think that things have changed some now. But the MLA, it's such a huge organization. It's like one of these gargantuan ocean liners. If you want to make a 10-degree turn to the left, you got to plan ahead about 10 miles in advance. It just doesn't respond very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What was RSA doing when you first joined? What were its major projects and goals?
Well, I think the journal was one thing, which was evolving and growing. Initially, it was called the newsletter, RSA newsletter, and then it became the Rhetoric Society quarterly. There were 5 issues of the newsletter, and the first issue of the quarterly is number 5, because there were these 4 quarterly issues before. I don't know whether it's 5 or 6, but anyway. That was important. It was Dick Young had become head of the English department at Carnegie Mellon. He got a grant for an NEH grant for, I don't know whether it was a summer institute or whatever, some kind of a seminar. And that was, you know, it was really kind of spreading interest in a knowledge of rhetoric, mainly focused on the field of English, although it was interdisciplinary from the start. Somebody was speculating, someone was talking with Ted, whether Henry Johnstone was one of the original founders. And I'm, you know, from philosophy at Penn State, and I'm not sure whether he was or not, but Dick Young recalls that Donald Bryant was one who early on was kind of drawn into being a member. Richard Ullman, he was a big MLA guy. Owen Thomas, who was a linguist. And there are others, but I can't remember who they were. But it was kind of bringing together I would say that their major project was bringing together a coherent and yet not restrictive, an intellectually substantial field of study, interdisciplinary. And I think it's been highly successful with that. When you look around here, and there are people from quite a variety of disciplines, I think I would say that was its major project. It has also, and I'm not sure how conscious this was at the start, RSA has been an organization that's very welcoming to young scholars, and has, I think more than any other academic society that I'm familiar with, developed real substantial projects to assist people coming into the field and then, you know, advancing. And I think of it as a field. Some people think of it as a discipline. I see it as an interdisciplinary field still. I don't know that it makes a whole hell of a lot of difference, but that has been something that, you know, we've occasionally talked about. I'm sort of anti-disciplinary people. Maybe because I'm just undisciplined as a person. And I think that's been one of the hallmarks of RSA. I mean, when Cheryl Geisler, who was my colleague at RPI for some years, when she had this idea for a mid-career seminar, or whatever it's called for faculty, it was RSA that took that, you know, that gave her room to make that happen. And I think that's been one of the great things that the society has done. So, yeah, I don't know whether that answers your question.
Yeah, that was great. What are your most important or prominent memories related to RSA?
Memories related to RSA. Well, that initial exchange with George Yost See, the interesting thing about what that was that I had read a review that George did of a book by a speech communication scholar who shall remain nameless. And my impression of the review was that it was savage. And I had this image of George Yost as this really severe, you know, sort of like the Thomas Aquinas, or, you know, a philosopher of this ferocious variety. And then when I met him, he was just totally different. George and I got so that we would always at any conference we met, we would always get together for a drink or dinner or something. Friendship with George Yost was one of the things that was a wonderful memory. Another very strong memory was I was elected president of RSA, not the United States, around 1990 or something like that. And so I planned, I was in charge of planning the conference, which was the first conference that we had outside Arlington, Texas. And I was very apprehensive about it, and it came off as, you know, quite a success. Now, a success back then was we had 180 people attend. That was great. That's a very strong memory. The first board retreat, which Jerry Hauser conducted at an airport hotel in Chicago. That's a very strong memory for me. And it was a key event in the history of RSA. It was Jerry who, I think a lot of people had understood for, you know, some years before, that RSA had outgrown the all-volunteer labor model that we were using. But Jerry was the one who kind of said, okay, we're going to get more professional. He was the one who found Kathy Cisa and hired her company to do some of the the business work of the society. He was the one who recognized that the society, and I remember he's quoted in this piece that's coming out in RSQ, that the value that the society was able to provide to its members would justify significantly higher dues. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a hard step to take, to increase dues, because, you know, if you've been charging, I don't know what it was, 10 bucks a year, 20 bucks a year, and you're gonna all of a sudden say, okay, hey, the dues are now $75 a year, or whatever. You know, the fear is people are going to, to hell with this. And Hauser was the one who had the courage to take that step. And I don't know that people have recognized that as an act of courage, as well as of business acumen. He understood that the society was providing value to its members that would justify, and he was right. And that was really, that retreat was a big turning point for the society. And I think that the idea of the Summer Institute came out of the that first retreat. And that was, Jack Seltzer refers to that as our greatest invention. I would argue that Cheryl Geisler's mid-career seminar, or whatever it is at least a close contender for our best invention. Other conferences, I remember there was a wonderful one in Tucson, which was a great venue for a conference. It was a lot of fun. Conference has always been fun. Mm-hmm. This has been, RSA is always a conference that I enjoy more than any other. And I suppose a lot of it is that I know more people here than at other conferences that I go to. I would say those are the strongest memories that I have. They're all good ones. I don't think I have any really bad memories. I did one potentially bad memory when we were planning the conference, I think it was 92, here in Minneapolis. I had this recurrent dream that, we'd signed a contract with the hotel, and in my dream, nobody showed up for the conference. And I'm sitting in a conference room with a few other board members and people from the hotel, and they're all saying, "Well, what are we going to do about this? We've got this contract with the hotel. We owe all this money to them." And then somebody says, "Whose signature is on the contract anyway?" And all eyes turned in my direction. And that's the point at which I would wake up sweating.
I bet. So the conference planning is the bad memory.
Yeah, but well, it was just that fear, but it was a big success. I think everybody felt really good about the way the conference went.
How has the organization changed throughout the time that you've been part of it?
Oh, it's become much more professional. It has gotten a whole hell of a lot bigger, of course. The journal has progressed from being first a newsletter, then a quarterly, but sort of like mimeographed TypeScript and stapled together, to a highly reputable peer-reviewed journal with four regular issues a year and now a special issue each year. And the quality of the scholarship is very high. In fact, I understand that when the Society applied for membership in the American ACLS, American Council of Learned Societies, that they recognize the quality of the journal as one of the strong arguments for membership. It has, if anything, it has strengthened its commitment to supporting young scholars and scholars who are rising, which I think is that's one of the really good things about our RSA. So I think, I worry that in growing as much as we have, that we run the risk of turning into a clone of the National Communication Association. I can remember, it was back in the 1970s, that I went to, for the first time, a national conference. It was what was then SCA. And it was why I ever came back is a mystery to me. It was a very alienating experience. It was lonesome as hell. There was no society, did nothing that I was aware of to make young scholars feel at home. Mm-hmm. RSA, I think, does that. And I hope that we always do that.
Yeah, that's a great sort of contrast there.
Yeah.
What do you think RSA will change in the years to come?
Will change? I don't know. My guess is it'll continue to grow in numbers. Something I would like to see the society do is take a stronger interest in pre-college education. If it's true, and I think it is true, that civic participation is at the heart of rhetoric as a field of practice and study, then we ought to be concerned with elementary and high school education, because if students don't learn to be responsible citizens there, they're not going to learn. Mm-hmm. And just as a matter of history, you look at one of the central figures in the history of rhetoric, Quintilian. Mm-hmm. He begins with the hopes that a prospective father should have for his son, not his daughter, of course, back then, but his son. He talks about the kind of toys that should be given to, you know, these ivory letters. I mean, that's, you think that Quintilian's is a cradle to grave mm-hmm. curriculum. And I would like to see RSA take more of an interest in pre-college education. How that would be, you know, what specific programmatic expressions of that interest would be, you know, I'm not in a position to say, but I think that there are serious problems with both elementary and high school education that RSA would have include the expertise to say something useful about.
That's great. This question probably leads you back to that answer, but what are your hopes for the organization's future?
Well, I think I've covered this. I hope that it never loses the focus on welcoming mm-hmm. young scholars and offering programs to assist young people to rise in the profession. I hope that it does take this broader interest in pre-college education. And I'm certainly not the only person who feels this way. And there are probably people who would be a lot smarter about developing real programs to address that interest. Hopes for RSA. I hope it continues to thrive. Mm-hmm. I hope it never turns into a clone of NCA or, God help us, MLA.
all I have for you. Anything else?
Okay, that's great.